What's up, Team Diadem? We're here for another Courtside Sessions podcast episode, the only podcast for junior tennis players, parents, and coaches. We're here with a guy who's been in the tennis game for quite some time and does a lot of great work, Tosin Alamewe. How are we feeling today, Tosin?
I'm feeling good. Thank you.
That's awesome. And like I mentioned, you've been in the tennis industry for, what, almost 30 years now?
Close. Little less than that. I want to say about 20 something years. I mean, I've been playing competitively since, you know, I was 10. So, yeah.
I love that. And let's start there. How did you get into tennis in the first place?
Believe it or not, I got into tennis when I used to live in Queens, New York. I joined an after-school program there. My coach at the time on a weekend actually took myself and the club, or the tennis club I was in, to Children's Day at the U.S. Open. So there at the time when I went, we saw Agassi, Steffi Graf before they became married, Sampras. I remember seeing James Blake at the little kids fair thing. So it was quietly till this day. I have an autographed picture, I think, that my mom kept, that Steffi Graf had autographed, that's actually in her house on her wall because she wanted to keep it.
Wow, that's awesome. So did that experience, kind of getting to interact with some of the pros, make you want to play tennis more or aspire to get to that level?
It did. It was definitely different back then. And most coaches who always talk about that era or go further back, tennis at the time, for that time, was such a big thing for me because I've done a lot of team sports, track, soccer, and it's always been fun. I loved it. But, you know, at the end of the day, when I really, you know, no matter how much you craft your skills in the team sports, you always have to share your craft with your team members, which is not a bad thing, but it also creates the limitations for you when you're trying to craft that, you know, your style in the team environment. You know, whenever you are, you know, training X amount of hours a day and somebody's training less than that, so it's like I have to help that person pick up their level of, you know, of their competitive play in a team environment. So it acts as an advantage and a disadvantage in the same sense. So at that time, when I did track, you know, my track team, we went to state and we placed second in state. My soccer team, we went to state as well, and we got knocked out in the first rounds back in middle school. So I told myself, I was like, you know, it's very hard for us to really compete if our team wasn't pulling the weight. So at the time, my music teacher said, hey, why don't you try tennis? You know, I know you're a solo individual, not saying like you're not a solo individual, but you'd like to, your hard work is not being shown on the field because your teammates don't really put that much energy. So at the time I was like, I don't know much about tennis. So believe it or not, I told my mom I wanted to try tennis. And she, until this day, she always tell parents and players that I coach to this day that she went to a garage sale and bought a 50-cent wooden racket at a garage sale for 50 cents. And ever since that time, I've been playing since before we moved to Florida in like 2000.
Wow, that's awesome. That's such a great story with the wooden racket. I think there's probably some players that are playing the junior circuit right now that can relate to that, you know, get some hand-me-down equipment,
right?
Something like that. And then what was the kind of the landscape like in the Queens area for junior tennis when you first started?
It was different. Queens, we, believe it or not, we didn't have my school at the time. They didn't really have the surface for tennis. So our courts were strictly concrete. So they had the line set up and they had the net present. But it wasn't like, you know, like an average tennis court you see. I mean, the tennis court we played in New York were strictly concrete. And till this day, believe it or not, when I go back and visit my school, they changed that and actually resurfaced the entire the outdoor playground, so it actually has a hard, actually has four hard courts, and it has the track around it. So I was like, wow, this is so reminiscent right here. I was like, you know, going to stay at track, they have the track here, and now they have the actual four tennis courts in the dead center of the track. I said, that's pretty neat. But yeah, the courts back then, they were just straight gravel. They were straight gravel. So imagine trying to play at a tennis court that is just straight gravel, just straight concrete. It's not smooth at all. I mean, you can imagine the ball bounces were just awful.
Wow, that's nuts. It's really cool though to hear that they've made the improvements and kind of embraced the tennis game there though nowadays.
Yeah, they did.
And then you eventually came down to Florida, you were saying, right? Was that for tennis specifically or just a family move?
Family move. My dad recently graduated middle school and he got his PhD as a pharmacist. So at the time, the hospital here where I live today in Highlands County, which is Florida Hospital, which is Advent now, they moved us and the entire family to Florida. Because he was he got interviewed for the position and he was more specialized in what he does. So they moved everybody here to Florida. And when I got to Florida, that saying goes, when you move to a tennis state, it was definitely tennis here in Florida is way different than it was in New York. I mean, that much I can say that is a true story. When you move to Florida, it's different. It is not when you're like in Ohio or New York or any of those northern states where we get to play tennis or do outdoor activities in generally X amount of times a year because of the cold. So it is different. It is 1000% different.
And then how old were you when you came down to Florida?
I was 13 at the time.
Okay, wow. So that transition coming to a tennis state, what did that do for your game?
It changed. It was definitely different. I mean, the environment here in the state of Florida was different. How I had a chance to practice with the players was different. The level of play was different. I mean, I can almost guarantee you, I mean, if we had half the tools now we did back then, I would say maybe 89% of the players were Division One on a day-to-day basis. Like 89% of the players that I practiced and trained with were D1 material. Like there was no question about it.
Wow, yeah, that's what I see it every day when I'm out here now, that there's still that high level of competitive play in Florida at the junior level, especially. How did you kind of shape your mindset to be able to go into that competitive environment day in and day out and take advantage of the opportunity to get better playing those players?
The biggest thing for me, and I speak on this in every lesson I teach with juniors today, you have to remember you started tennis as a beginner, period. The thing I believe when you gain a new skill and that skill becomes an asset and you try to use that asset out there in the competitive field, you forget that at one point in time, you could not even accomplish or perform that one skill. So what happens is you forget the learning process of that skill that allows you to compete today, and then that gets overshadowed. And I feel like in today's game, there's so many great players, and they forget that one thing. Is like, you know, I feel like I'm playing bad. I feel like I'm off. I'm like, no, you're not really playing bad. Each day that you play and compete, you gain a new skill asset. And the best example is like a video game. Every time you complete a level, you get a new skill. That new skill helps you go further in the game until you beat the main boss. So when you look at it, when you play a match, you lose a match, you gain a new skill. Now, when you go back and play that person again, that new skill that you learned actually gives you a better fighting chance in the match because you gained a new skill and that skill actually benefits you going forward. Now, there is times where some players believe, well, I gained this new skill that I'm still playing bad. But I always rebuttal, like, you gained the new skill. Remember, it's a new skill. It's not something you're just going to understand within a few months. It will take a while. Again, new skill. It's not, you know, I learn it and it's like, you know, it's like I master it. It's like a baby when the baby going through the stages of trying to walk and crawl. They stumble a couple of times. They know the skill, but they're going to stumble. But that's not going to stop them from learning that skill until they get to the stage where the skill becomes a natural, natural motion for them. So you want to take the skill that you learn and make it into a natural motion, because tennis itself or any sports itself, it's all about natural movement. None of the things or none of the actions you perform are forced actions. I mean, a lot of coaches will agree that whenever you're teaching a child anything, you always want the child to feel natural. And if they don't feel natural and create it to be a forced motion, it becomes more difficult because they're thinking about everything. And you don't, I mean, for right now, you don't think about when you have to stand up and walk, it's a natural instinct. You don't think about when you have to open the door, it's a natural instinct. It's all natural. Everything that you do in any sport is natural instinct. Everything, how you shoot a, you know, shoot a basketball, throw a football, kick a soccer ball, even hit a tennis ball, it's a natural motion. It becomes natural, it becomes second nature. And, you know, we look at it as like, it looks easy, right? It looks easy because that person has made it look easy because it's natural. So yeah, I'm pretty well sure if you went back to the early stages when they were still learning, first learning it, it would look ugly. But now it's not ugly; it looks natural.
Definitely, I love that, and I think it sounds like you embraced like a growth mindset on your path towards mastery, where it's like you said, the analogy of going up every level until you eventually beat the main boss. I love that, and I think a lot of kids will be able to resonate with that too. What when you were training as a junior, was your end goal? What was that place that you were looking to take your game to?
My training has my end goal, believe it or not, was always to learn something new each time I trained. There was never a day that when I tell you tennis is a sport that no matter how good you are, you're always going to learn something new and you're always going to improve. And I remembered maybe 3-4 years ago, Rafa Nadal said the same thing in an interview in Indian Wells. And I quote, you know, he said, like, I'm training and improving my game every day because the game is not going to be the same. For me to compete at a high level, I have to consistently train and adapt myself to actually allow myself to play at the highest level I can be. And I believe that's where in tennis, I see the juniors that go out there and play, they always will have, I always quite like, they always have the same single style. And I like to tell my juniors, here at my academy that I coach at, you don't want to have the same single style. You want to be variety based, because one of the biggest things, and even I've seen coaches today talk about, if we were to go back in the day and let's say there was a good funny poll, coachy said, if we put one of the greatest tennis players from back in the day and froze them and then brought them to today, what would be the biggest difference? And it was just amazing to see. I mean, we were like, oh, rackets, the speed of the ball, you know, the strings, all that good stuff. It's like, it's not the same. And even if one of the biggest things I heard Roger Federer talk about upon his retirement was, when he was talking about his equipment, was the strings changing. From back in the day, he was using gut on all of his rackets. Now he's using a hybrid, half poly, half natural gut, which has changed from that time to this time. So it's not the same. So that's, for me and my practices, I'm always looking forward to learn something new, because it's not going to, how I won my matches against players was not going to remain the same. If I won my match playing a certain style, I can almost guarantee you history doesn't repeat itself. And that is I'm a firm believer in that. How you beat this person in this match is not going to be the same in the next match. They know what you did, and history will not repeat itself. So you can't go into that match with the same similar style to play that second match again, because they would have made adjustments in that match. And I think the biggest, biggest example I go to today, Alcaraz's drop shots. When Alcaraz got blued up on the tour, what was his number one shot he went to? The drop shot. And he made that such a weapon. But now everybody knows when they play Alcaraz, they look for the drop shot. So what has happened? Every time he has played the drop shot, he's lost more points than win more points because now people are expecting it. Like, we're looking for the Alcaraz drop shot because that's his go-to shot. Now we've taken that away from him. So now he knows, okay, this shot's no longer going to be my go-to shot. I have to do something different. So he realizes that. So he does a little bit more with the drop shot. So that way it's more effective now than it was then because it was just hit the drop shot and I win the point. Now if he hits the drop shot, they are able to read it in advance and then they end up losing the point.
Definitely. I think that's such a great point, too, that it's the game itself evolves, the equipment evolves, but also your personal style has to evolve over time. And I think that Alcaraz comparison is a great example of that. You know, he is at the pinnacle of the game and he still has to continue to switch it up and develop new skills and refine them. And that's the only way he can stay competitive and continue to be at the top of the ATP rankings and everything, right?
Right, correct.
I would also love to hear a little bit about how your kind of career progressed through juniors. But when you were up in high school, did you play the national junior tournaments or were you just staying in Florida playing the local ones? Because there's great competition down here too. So
I did play high school and I did play a lot of junior tournaments. One of the things I would say back then, the high level, the junior tournaments back then, they were the nitty gritty. Like you had to be on, like it was grind mode back then. Like half the level of tournaments that the juniors has available now, a lot of us did not have access to them back then. And not saying we didn't have access to them, like we couldn't get to them, but the competitive level to get into them was literally like you were playing a qualifying round to get into the US Open of every tournament. So a level 6 back then was equivalent to a level 4 today.
Oh, wow.
And literally a level 7 right now is equivalent to a level 5. It was grind mode. There was no tournament where you had an easy, no matter what your first round was like, you were going the distance in your first round. Most of these matches back then, these kids were good. These kids were amazing. These kids put in time. They put in work. You couldn't come in on an off day. When I say that back then, tennis made you realize that if you were not on that day, you were gone early that day. There was literally a half work day for you. You would be, if your match started at 8, if you weren't on, you were done off the court by 9. Consolation would start maybe mid noon. Your day would be done by 2 o'clock. That you if you were not on, your tournament day will be done by 2 p.m. Just depending on how it was ran, but if you weren't on, yes, you were gone by 2 p.m.
Wow, yeah, that's probably a little bit more stressful, it sounds like, than kind of the modern landscape where it's not quite as competitive at every tournament because there's more opportunities now, I think, for not the full-time players, but the kind of the recreational or the beginners and that kind of stuff. Do you feel the same there?
I do. The landscape of is it now versus then does allow more opportunities for the rec players and the recreational players, because you couldn't be a recreational player and play junior tournaments back then. No way. It was even in JTT was at its highest. JTT was just as competitive. Like, I can't tell you how our JTT team, we made it to the finals before we lost to a team from St. Pete. And it was down the wire. Boys' match, girls' match, the mixed doubles. The match was all, and we had some solid players back then. I wouldn't say it was stressful, but it made you stay on your game. It really made you realize that to get to that tier of competitive play, you had to really work day in, day out. And I feel that's what tennis teaches you primarily is, are you going to have a good work ethic or are you going to have a part-time work ethic? Because even though we've created more opportunities today for the players to develop and everything, we've also created the slow mindset that it gets too hard. I have to take some days off. But then what happens is you take too many days off. And then therefore you're back. You rather kind of going forward with what you're doing, you're going backward because it is tennis. Realistically, tennis can be a stressful sport because it is a solo sport. But tennis will help you understand that, as Andre Agassi made a, you know, quote, tennis is teaches you life, period. The scoring aspect, the rules and everything, it's life based. It's really everyday life. You know, you start with love, zero all, start with nothing. At one point in time, you gain an advantage in your life. Deuce, you gain to where you're at a standstill in life. You know, faults is, you know, you made an error on something. It teaches you life goals. And I believe that's what tennis really, really pushes towards the kids, is making them understand it's a life-based sport. And tennis is one of these sports that teaches you that firmly, because it's, believe it or not, it's you. It's you, yourself, and yourself. Most days in a team environment, if I have a bad day, I can hide behind my teammates. As scary as that sounds, I can hide behind my teammates. Now, some coaches will kind of disagree with that, say, no, you can't do that. Sure, you can. Watch any team sport activity. Football. If my quarterback is off, you know, we'll probably go off the linebacker, off defense, off offense. If defense is off, we'll try to step up offense a little bit. But think about it. When those areas are off, we try to pull another section of the team to cover that weakness. So tennis is, if I'm having a bad day, I'm having a bad day. I'm not going to hide behind the tennis ball. I'm not going to hide behind my racket. It's just going to show on the court, period. There's no hiding behind it. This is happening. You're seeing it. I am having a bad day and there's no way around it. The real goal is, how can I push forward while I'm having that bad day? Because I do believe is there are some days that can't be saved, but there are some days you can make the best of. That's where we want to really go. How can I make the best of what's left of this day, even if I'm having a bad day? Because you're not always going to have the perfect match. And Brad Gilbert has a book on that called Winning Ugly. Every match win is never going to be won perfectly. We all know this, and look at all the players he's trained. They have all won ugly, and many times in many factions you didn't think they were going to win. But not everything is going to come out the way you want to. Sometimes winning ugly is more it's more simple, because it's not, you don't complicate it. So if we try to win perfectly, there's too many complications. If we win ugly, it's not as complicated as you think. You just do the best you can in that moment, how you can. And that's what makes tennis so great. And the competitive level has changed from now till then, because we see a lot of juniors today. They don't want to win ugly. Like, they don't want to walk out for the match knowing they won the match and they hit 27 double faults and they missed 80% of forehands, or they dumped every shot in the net. Fun fact, before Aryna Sabalenka won the Australian Open, in a year, she hit almost 400 double faults. I mean, that's unheard of. But she knew that her matches were going to be ugly. So the best thing you can do is make best with what you have. So if we focus on making do with what we have and making it better, you actually have a higher chance of getting a better result out of it versus trying to, you know, you can't make everything pretty. You can't make every project pretty. No matter how much paint you put on it, no matter how many times you try to make it look fancy, you're not going to be able to make it look pretty. It's going to look a little bit off, may look off-centered, the paint color may be off, but make best with it. The presentation counts more than you actually trying to make it look good. That's what we have to realize.
I love that. And I think life isn't pretty. You know what I mean? And that's just a simple fact of everybody has to go through the day to day, and it's going to be ups and downs, just like a tennis match. So I think that's a really good point, that tennis gives you those life skills that are going to transcend far beyond the court into your personal relationships, into your professional career, all that kind of stuff. So I'm glad you touched on that. And then I know you're still playing competitively now, right? A little bit.
I still play competitively. I haven't played since 2002. I think my last tournament I played was a men's designated men's 4-5 tournament at Lake Kane. Most of the tournaments ever since COVID had hit, most of the tournaments we did have for the adults kind of went down because of COVID, and a lot of the adult events kind of dwindled off. But the last tournament I played was 2022 at Lake Kane, a men's 4-5 event, and I ended up winning that tournament. So I still go out and practice, you know, with some good friends of mine that are really good players, and if I'm not practicing with the juniors or working with juniors, I still try to go out and play as much as I can.
That's awesome. What is it like kind of transitioning from playing like junior tennis to then continuing to play competitively as an adult? Is there any differences there, or in the atmosphere? Is it different, or is it kind of just you're continuing on the same path?
What about the thing about adult tennis and as you gain into the leagues, I mean, especially in the men's open or the men's 4-5, 4-0 and higher, a lot of those players that play, you can tell in that division, they were a former either collegiate athlete or a top junior player. And it's pretty much a continuation, literally, because when you really look at it, it's not... I tell my players in adult tennis, there's no really bad adults, especially in the men's open and in the men's NRTP 4-0 and up. There are really no bad players. Those guys were former, if you look at their past, they were a former junior competitive player or a former collegiate player. So they know how to play. So it's not, you're not walking in this like, hey, you know, no, unless you're playing in the, you know, lower echelon, it's pretty much the same. The only main difference is that they're, not most of the adults are not going to be able to grind as long as the junior players. I mean, of course, age, you know, your physical state, you know, you're not going to be able to grind as long, but they're still going to come and play. I think 2 years ago, 3 years ago at the Orlando Tennis Center in Orlando, I looked at a 76-year-old guy playing men's 70s or something like that, and he was just moving fast as a junior player. It was phenomenon.
It was, wow, like, that's awesome.
I was shocked. I mean, at his age, he was. I mean, I went up and asked him, hey, you know, what division you were playing? He said he was playing in the men's 70s and up, and he told me he was 74 at the time, and I kid you not, he was moving like he was Alcaraz at his age on the court. I mean, he was balling. I mean, most of his matches were going the distance, but he was grinding like at his age. And I was like, this is a sport, you know, it's, you can play for an attorney. I mean, you have a 70 something year old man still moving like he's, you know, 14, 16, like with no problem. I mean, there is in the adults, when you get into the adults and you play that men's open and you play the, you know, or the NRTP and the 4-5s and up, you're not playing weak players. You're playing ballers. Those guys understand, you know, they're here to play. I mean, you leave all that, however you feel, you leave all that in your car. The second you step on the court and you ready to play, they're going. It's all go. No breaks, all gas.
Yeah, no, I think that's really cool to hear, especially for all the junior players out there, to understand that this can be something that you can do your whole life at a competitive level. And continue to progress through the game and all that kind of stuff is I think an important point for younger players to understand that this could be a lifelong thing that you can pursue and have opportunities for forever to be able to play. What I know now too that you've kind of transitioned into being a tennis professional. What was that like for you? What was your kind of your first job working in tennis?
My first work field working in tennis, I just graduated high school. And so I was doing internship at a local club here for about a year. Then after that, I had moved to Lakeland, where I went to go finish my degree or gain my degree in computer information and technology. So I did my associates, I did my bachelor's. Then after that, in the process of that, I had met two brothers who owns a tennis academy in Lakeland, Galindo Tennis Academy. And both of them, they're amazing guys, both of them from Spain. They were going to college here at the time. And before they, you know, their dad owns the home academy in Spain. So I learned a lot from talking to them. And I didn't really get into the coaching until I started getting into it deeper. I started being an assistant coach for my local high school team that I played for, Avon Park High School. I was the assistant coach there. After a while, I became the head coach for Sebring High School. And I really didn't decide to get into tennis after my first year of coaching of when I coached the high school team. And I realized that the biggest missing component for a lot of the high school players was understanding, is realistically understanding. I can't tell you, there was a resource and lots of information for tennis, but it wasn't preached enough to the parents to where they understood, hey, there's a tool, there's an avenue that can help your child excel his or her tennis game. This is how you access it. So it's like that information was kept top secret from a lot of high school juniors, because a lot of the high school players usually come onto high school tennis, come on as, I call this as a 10 and under junior learning tennis for the very first time. They know, they don't know anything. So tennis is one of these sports where we're like doctors. The tennis coaches, we're like doctors, because tennis is the sport where parents have zero understanding of. And it's just like your doctor. I don't have any understanding of the medical field. I mean, you tell me I have a cold, I have a cold. If you tell me I have the flu, I have the flu. You know, you tell me that I may need surgery, I may need surgery. You know, I can't question that, because I can go and do the research and everything, but it's not going to give me the main result of what am I looking for. I'm just going to get bits and pieces. So tennis coaches were like doctors. If you tell me, you know, my child needed to practice three times a week to work on serves or forehand, I'm going to take your word for it, because I don't understand that. So when I got into coaching, I realized that that information was not available, or it wasn't spoke on to, especially to a lot of the high school families, because a lot of the high school families, they look at tennis, say, yeah, it's a fun sport. You know, I can go in and do it. My child doesn't have to have much, know much. And they get into it, they like it, and then they realize, well, you know, they want to do a little bit more, but they don't know where to start. So it's like, okay, I like this, you know, how can I do it more? What can I do? Well, I know I can go to a club and go see a coach and work and everything, but what can I do to actually advance my knowledge in the sport competitively? This is where the information was not really pushed out there. Because most of the time, not many parents would, you know, kind of look into it. You know, they hear it, hear, say, he, she say. But it wasn't really put out there enough for them to understand that. So when I got into it, I wanted to find a way to help the parents understand what tennis is. But for me to make them understand that, I had to broaden my knowledge more. And I had to learn more and deeper so I could actually take the information I learned and simplify it for them. Because, as I said, tennis coaches are like doctors. If you tell me this is what I need to do, what does that mean? So, you know, if you're saying I'm going to need this type surgical procedure, okay, I know I need it, but what does that mean? What does that mean for my recovery period? Or what does that mean for my health going forward? You know, can you simplify it so I have a better understanding? You know, you can't sit here and say, I have plexitis something, something, something. Okay. You used a big term. What does that mean? I mean, if you tell somebody they're sick, okay, I'm sick to what degree? Do I have the cold? Do I have the flu? Do I have strep throat? Like, I'm sick, but what am I? What kind of sick am I? Because they're going to say, well, you're sick, but how sick are you? Are you, you have the common cold sick? Do you have strep throat sick? You have chicken pox? I mean, we don't know. I mean, we just hear you're sick. Can you simplify that so I have a better understanding of what's happening? So that's what happened when I got into coaching, is I wanted to simplify the information to make it easier for the families, because I already knew that if I went up to a brand new family right now and I tell them, hey, we have these junior circuit tournaments for kids. Okay, what does that mean? Right. What does that mean? Exactly. They're going to look at you. What does that mean? I have to simplify it for them. I have these nice small kids events for 10 and under kids, similar to like T-ball or YMCA soccer. When I put it like that, oh, okay, I get it. Because when they hear that, then it kind of clicks, you know, little small kids events for kids that they can learn tennis and learn to play tennis competitively, just like they do at YMCA soccer or T-ball, because they know, oh, those events are on the weekends. So I get it now. Ha ha, you know, a couple of hours, then kids go out. It's the same. The same time frame that your kid goes to YMCA soccer is the same time frame your kid goes and plays a 10 and under orange ball, green ball, or red ball event. It's about a couple of hours of your Saturday. One day, you'd be done by before noon.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. And then was there anything that you did to kind of hone in on taking your knowledge and your presentation of all these complex tennis concepts to simplify it for the people? Did you do external research? Did you write notes? What was that process for you like to get to that point where you could effectively communicate with everybody?
I remember a statement made when I was working at Galindo Tennis Academy in Lakeland by one of the owners, Isaac Galindo. And I remember till this day, he told me when I was trying to learn to get into coaching, and word for word, forget everything you know about tennis, because everything you know about tennis now is not what you think it is. And I was so confused, like, what do you mean forget everything I know about tennis? Like, until I got on the court and I had to, I won't lie, when I had to try to teach a child what I know, I was struggling. I didn't know how to relay that information to the child because they were so confused. And Isaac told me that, you know, the hardest thing is it's not having the knowledge. How can I translate that information to a 10-year-old? How can I translate the simple concept of a forehand to a 10-year-old? I can't translate that information to a 10-year-old as I would an adult player. I can't. It will not translate well. If I tell an adult player, turn sideways, put your racket up, elbows out, they understand it. If I tell that to a 10-year-old, I've lost a 10-year-old once I say, turn sideways, put your racket up. I've already lost that 10-year-old, because that's too much information to actually for them to intake. So I had to really study on how they did it. And believe it or not, is by using much more smaller activities where the child can actually retain the information and actually in return learn it on a bigger scale is what I had to learn, is not use too much information. Simplify it to where the information is very simple and basic. If I tell the child, turn sideways like you're in a lunch line. All right, guys, you're going to lunch. How do you line up for lunch? They get in the position of it. Or if I tell them, you know, stick your racket up like you're high-fiving, giving somebody a high five, what did they do? They stick the racket up like they're giving somebody a high five. Simple information like that makes it easier for them to understand. Because no matter, believe it or not, we try to hone on the fine techniques of tennis. And like I said, tennis is one of those sports where it's it's different. It's a very foreign sport, and that's why I say tennis coaches are like doctors. We have to every bits of information that we understand, we have to simplify it. For other coaches, we can sit here and talk all tennis talk and use every terminology in the dictionary for tennis. But if I have a 10-year-old child, I can't use that same terminology because the child does not understand it. It's like it's a foreign language. If I'm not speaking English to them. So I have to simplify it to where it makes sense for them. So I spent a lot of time looking for ways to simplify things because I myself was like the child. I didn't know a lot of the things my coach taught me. It was difficult. And one of my good coaches till this very day, Mr. Lucky Dixon, who was my high school coach, and he was a teacher. And a lot of the things he taught me, and he simplified it. And his 40 plus years of education till this day is he knew how to make it to where you could understand it. Because I feel like, as I said earlier, when you're mastering a new craft and you're trying to add a new skill, the skill is something that was simplified enough for you to learn it. So it's anything, and that goes for anything in life in general that you do. When you install a new part in a car, the car is going to run rough for the first couple of minutes until everything starts to get through the system. Then what happens is the car calms down and you can use it functional. When you start taking a new type of vitamin supplement, you're going to feel you're going to feel bad at first until your body starts to get through your system. So in long sense, at first, you're not going to understand it until it becomes simplified for you. So I needed to simplify the information for the kids. So this way, at first, it's a little hard for them. But once they understand it, it was easy for them to go there going on forward. And I believe that was the challenge for any coach was even if you were top 40 or even number one in the world at one point in time, how can you simplify all your information to a child till they understand it? And if it's one thing, and now till this day, I remember Pete Sampras saying, and they asked him, would you become a coach? And he said, no. And I never understood that why. And now I understand why. Because how does a legend like Sampras convey his information to a player for them to understand it? It's like you have to work. You become a teacher and you have to simplify that information. It's like the traveling and everything he didn't want to do because of his family. But really, how could Sampras take his glory years and simplify it so that way, let's say, my 12-year-old would understand that? No, it would be difficult because there's no way he can convey that information without having to write it down for himself and say, okay, this is what I have to do to simplify this because I can't tell the child to do this too much. So it goes actually deeper into it when you think about it.
Oh, 100%. I think that's one of the signs of a strong coach is their ability to communicate complex concepts and simplify them like that. Do you think there's any other particular things that parents should look for in a coach besides that?
I believe the things, and I think this is kind of talked a lot, even on the USPTA level and PTR, is like you always want the child to relate to the coach. But I believe the biggest relation in the coach should understand is you want to relate to the child. You want the child to have a very comfortable with you. And still know that when the child comes, you're going to work and everything and still get stuff done. But you have an understanding is there is lots of limitations you can do as a coach when coaching a child. One of the biggest limitations is knowing when to stop. I believe there are some coaching sessions I have done in years I've seen. There may be a session where you're teaching a child and maybe a top junior and they're just having off day and sometimes that session cannot be saved. Believe it or not, I would rather, and some coaches may say I'm wrong, I would rather cut a session short and come back the next day knowing that I will have a better, much more better results than trying to save that session knowing that I can work with this player for an hour and a half and 2 hours. Did that child really gain anything out of that session, especially if they're having a bad day? There's some sessions you can't save, and it has nothing to do with your coaching. Just that in particular player was just off. And I know some people say, well, you got to tell them to push through and, you know, get them through it. That's the problem. Because then if I'm trying to save a session and trying to tell this child to push through, what do you think is going to happen when this child in a bad day goes and plays a match? It's just going to get worse. Now, I'm not saying the child should quit the match, but I'm saying in a moments of the session, I would use that session as I tell the players has a reset. You need to reset. And sometimes a child can relate to that because understanding like, okay, my coach didn't really push me hard today because I didn't have a good day. It lets the child have that inner talk with themselves, talk with you as the coach, talk with the parents. And then when they get into a match and they have something like that happens, they reset. And a good example is whenever you watch Novak Djokovic play and he forfeits the set, no one knows that he intentionally forfeits that set. His performance doesn't look like it. He intentionally forfeits the set. Why does he do that? Reset. Because what happens the next couple of sets? His engines come on, he goes in beast mode, and then you're wondering, what just happened? The man took a reset. He literally found a way to reset, and he believes, just as I was saying, he knew he couldn't save that set. So why would he continue to pour energy into that set knowing he can't save it? His option would be, I'm not going to put as much energy into this set. I'll take the L on the set. I'll reset. I'll come back and play this match stronger and better. And he does it every single time. You watch him do it every single time. He will literally forfeit the set or just not put as much energy into the set, lose the set, reset, come back, and he's a totally different individual. And that's how I like to look at it. It's like if a man who's won 24 slams is doing something like that, we can do something like that as coaches. Maybe we put the fact is we can't always save our sessions. Like if a child is having a bad day and they're not, and you, I mean, you're 10, 20 minutes into a session, you're not anything to get anything out of it. Sometimes you just have to not try to save the session, you know, let the child go home, let them have a, you know, kind of talk with themselves. I've done that quite a bit. And I can't tell you how many times my players will come back to practice the next day, a brand new individual. And they'll tell me, coach, I had some time to sit down with myself and kind of relax. And it helped me kind of gain better insight, and it helped them in their matches because doing that, it made them understand like, There are some things in life that no matter how hard you try, it can't be saved. It's not saying you don't try to save it, but you don't want to pour your energy into trying to save it. It's like trying to fix a broken glass. You can sit there and try to fix the broken glass and you can get in, you're just going to, you know, in the small little pieces, it's just going to, you know, cut your hands as you're doing it. It can't be saved. Rather trying to pour your energy into trying to fix the broken glass, pour energy to clean up the mess of the broken glass and focus on what you can do going forward so you don't break the next glass. So
yeah, no, I think that's a really cool concept, and it's something that we've had a lot of very high level coaches on, and no one's really talked about that that approach in the Novak style reset in training, which I think is really cool. And I hope some other coaches hear that, and I'd love to hear their opinions on it too, because I imagine there might be some back and forth there. But I obviously, you mentioned you did some high school coaching to start, and then I think you've progressed into, you have your own academy, right?
Yes I do.
Yeah, what has that been like, and how did that process start for you?
It was at first, when I formulated the company, it was just strictly just stringing rackets. That's really what it was. And because I just wanted to do something because I like tennis, and I you know, got interest into stringing rackets. I got really good at stringing them. I remembered maybe 2019, I received an Instagram message from Evan asking me if I wanted to join the Premier team. And I remember years ago, at level six in Lakeland, and majority of the players who were using Ditem strings was using the Solstice. I remember it as clear as day. I remember the package as clear as day. As a lot of those rackets, a lot of the junior rackets then were using the Solstice string. So I was like, I already knew how credible the string was, or Ditem was, because I remember that string. I'm like, yeah. So yeah, you know, why not? So at the time, you know, it was just a racket company. So I would just, you know, I got a lot of the rackets and strings and everything. And After coaching for a while, and I had some success doing it, I decided, okay, I was going to formulate my own program doing it. At first, I didn't want to call it an academy at first because I wanted it to be something different. And it was just not till recent that I decided to call it an academy, because I wanted to change the academy landscaping. And in my mind, I know I'm taking on a big task, because when you call something an academy or anything an academy, the first thing, there's three things that comes into mind: the pricing, the eliteness of it, and then the actual importance of going to the in particular academy. Those three things. So when I say I wanted to change the landscaping of how an academy is looked at, is I wanted to actually make the players feel like they can come here, train hard, bust their butts without feeling like they have to give up who they are to do so. And what I mean by that is when a parent sends their kid to an academy, the first mental thing that comes to the child is, I can't mess up because mom and dad are putting X amount of dollars in. I can't mess up. And there's no way around that. But in reality, we have to look at it, believe it or not, we have to look at it like this. You're going to put X amounts of dollars into anything. When you buy a house and you buy a brand new house and something goes wrong somewhere in the house, you can't blame the real estate agent. It is what it is. When you buy a brand new car and there's a recall, you can't really blame the company. You can, but it is what it is. At the end of the day, we have to understand that when you put X amount of dollars into something, it's bound something will happen, regardless good or bad. It's going to happen. And we have to make the kids understand, like, no, your parents didn't send you here and you feel like you have to give up who you are because your parents are putting X amount of dollars. Your parents want to send you here so you can gain a better insight in life and gain a better living style when you become older. Turn it into a much more life lesson. You're not going to, if the child feels like my parents are putting X amount of dollars, they're going to get burned out, because all they can think about is, my mom and dad is putting X amount of dollars, I don't want to waste their money. But if you make the child feel like they're going there for the experience, for the life experience and the life knowledge they can get, it changes. Because let's think about this. Andre Agassi used to train with Nick Bollettieri, and a lot of people who know Andre Agassi knew Andre Agassi did not care about training at all. It is in every single documentary you can look up, and people who have been around Andre knows Andre was one of those guys. No, he was a stylish type guy. He was living his best life. It was not his forte to go and practice his butt off. So, but he trained with Nick Bollettieri. He really did. And he became great, because Nick bestowed that you can become great without having to sacrifice who you are. You can remain who you are and become great at the same time. So I feel when you send your child to any tennis academy, I think every tennis academy and some academies these days are getting to that stage to where you don't have to sacrifice who you are to become great, but you still got to put the hard work. You still got to show up. You still can be you, but just know that be you and learn how to be you as you become older, as you become wiser, as you get a better understanding. That's what's going to make you value the sport more. If we remove the if we remove the academy sense, I'm putting this much money in, don't waste my money, to I'm sending you there because I want you to become a better individual in that activity, and I want you to understand the life lessons you can get from going to that place. I think kids would have a better understanding what they can do to become better and not feel like they have to, you know, they have to give up being a preteen because they're going to a some top tier academy. You can still be a preteen. Just understand when you're going there, you don't give up your hard work. You just understand how to become more efficient at your hard work is what we want you to understand.
Tosin, I really appreciate your time with us today. It's been unbelievable. I think we could have gone on for hours, so maybe we'll have to run it back for season two of the Courtside Sessions. But for everybody at home, if they wanted to check out your academy, learn more about you, where could they do that at?
They can visit us online, of course, racketarcade.club, which actually racket is spelled in the British way, not the actual with traditional way, with a Q. So you spell it with the Q, RACUQET, arcade, you know, like the video arcade .club. Or, of course, they can, you know, find us on any of the social platforms, either Facebook or Instagram.
Again, thank you so much, Tosin.